Today, I would like to start with a review of the different types of acid-base problems that we've done. And I'd like to retell it from the perspective of having covered them, meaning that we're going to understand, hopefully, better why we approach the problems the way we do, the dance that we have to do sometimes that we need a PKA, but we're given a PKB. We're given information about an acid, but a problem's talking about a base instead. So I want to help you with the word problem part of these problems, because a lot of these acid-base problems, a lot of equilibrium problems in general, in fact, stem from the fact that students have difficulty capturing what's being said in the problem and turning that into the correct chemical formula. Because most people understand the ice part. Most people actually end up being able to do the math. In grading the exam problem with the one ice problem that we had, most people, if you made mistakes, they were little mistakes, the same kind of mistakes you might make in general algebra problems anyways. So it's not ice that's the problem. It's coming up with the right chemical formula to create the correct ice problem. So I forget which order I did these in, so let me go back to one of the earlier sets of notes, because I know that a couple of days back, I identified these different types of acid-base problems. So, yes. So first one is pH of a solution of a weak acid. That's the easiest, and I know we've done it a bunch, but because I said I wanted to review, let's tackle that. So, review. pH of a solution of a weak acid. So, rather than solving a problem, let's just talk about setting it up. Now, we haven't formally talked about the list of strong and weak acids. I'm realizing that based off of some of the answers that you had given in your previous exam. So if we get time today, I'm going to go back and review what are some common examples of strong and weak acids and bases. So you may not know that nitric acid is a strong acid, but nitrous acid is a weak acid. So you could be given something like nitrous acid, HNO2. Automatically, this is going to mean dissociation. So if I can highlight here the word acid and emphasize that the pH of a solution of an acid is due to the dissociation of that acid. So that's why you have set up the problem the way that we have. That you have one H plus that's dissociating, and then we have the conjugate base. Now, if you've read the chapter, you know there are what are called polyprotic acids. And dealing with problems of polyprotic acids, there's a couple of assumptions that you need to make. So they're not the worst kind of problems. If we don't get time to do those today, we'll do those Monday. Next quarter, you'll learn some more interesting problems involving polyprotic acids. I'm making that comment because if you look at every single example we've done so far, everything's been a monoprotic example, something that can only dissociate to produce one proton. So let's see if there's anything else further here. Oh, yes. If we are given an acid, then we need the Ka or pKa. pKa is nothing more than the negative base 10 log of Ka, so either form is fine. But we need one of those of the acid. Does that help, for those of you who might still have been confused about these acid problems, did that help make it clear at all? If you didn't mind even just showing a yes or no in the participants window. Or is it the fact that it's a beautiful out there, day out there, just totally distracting everybody and you're waiting for me to be done? Oh yeah, that'll probably light them all up. There we go. Okay, so let's move to the second kind of problem then, which was... the pH of a solution of a weak base. So, that's tricky, I'm realizing it, because if you take a weak acid like nitrous acid, and then instead looked at the salt of sodium nitrite, that technically is basic. But the way that I tend to treat that problem is that nitrite is the conjugate of nitrous acid. That's why there's a different problem type that we worked. When I think of a pH of a weak base, I think of something that's the equivalent of this weak acid, something that all by itself, when you put it into water, is going to cause more hydroxide to form. Now, we tend to use the pH scale. The book does these problems of pOH scale. And the only reason for that is that if you're working a base problem, it is simpler to come up with an answer in pOH. But most people tend to think in terms of pH. And so that's why my questions tend to ask for pH. But you should be able to calculate pOH as well, because it is related. And one way of working these types of problems would require knowing what, at some point, the pOH is. So anyways, getting on with it. pH of a solution of a weak base. So the easiest type of example would be ammonia or an amine, which is where you stick carbons onto ammonia. So I'll just take ammonia itself. Now, interestingly enough, if I'm really being technically correct, if I take ammonia, the substance, it is a gas. So ammonia, if you put it in a bottle, it is a solution. But here's the thing. When you bubble the gas through water and it dissolves, well, it ends up reacting with water. So I'm sorry, let me put in water here. Now you might say, but okay, why didn't you do it in the acid case? And the answer is my whole pet peeve about the way of representing things with H3O+. So here's the reason maybe I should be doing it. If I say, here's the acid reacting with water, wouldn't it then make parallel sense to say, here's the base reacting with water? But when you have a base react in water, it's very clearly going to deprotonate a water, and it's going to give you an hydroxide. Maybe that hydroxide has some complicated structure, but it really exists as an ion also. H3O plus is a representation of how H3 or H plus exists in solution, not necessarily a clearly identifiable true species. So I know it's kind of fussy, but if you're all confused, I'm just trying to explain the logic. An acid puts an H plus that gets taken up somehow. In this case, this Bernstedt-Lowry base directly reacts with water to produce the substance ammonium hydroxide. Now, we could write this the way I did here in... what would that be called? A reaction form. But it would make more sense, if we're trying to work the problem, to write this as it really is. A pair of ions. Why could I do that? Can I fry that last brain cell? It's a strong electrolyte. It completely dissociates in solution, which means it really exists as just a collection of ammonium and hydroxide ions. So it is a correct way to represent what really exists in the solution afterwards. The question has come up, what is the difference between ammonia and ammonium? So, little breakout here. Ammonia is the neutral substance NH3. Ammonium is the conjugate acid, the ion. How do we know if it will turn into the conjugate base or acid? Oh, so you, okay, so someone's asked exactly the question I've been avoiding so far, which is, I'm not even going to talk about it yet until we finish all these examples, because these are the ones I want to focus on today, and then the interesting question, the valid question that someone asked me about, well, what if it's something that could be both a base and an acid? What happens? We'll get to that. All right. So, but coming back to the problem. So we were given a weak base. So that means the pH or the pOH of a solution of a base is due either to, actually there's two things. It's either due to the reaction of the base with water. If we had a Brunsted-Lowry base, or the dissociation of the base. Which is not a problem you're going to really tackle this quarter, except for one easy example. And the reason is, if you have dissociation of hydroxide that you're talking about, that almost always means some kind of weak base with hydroxide, which is also a weak electrolyte. So you can't just automatically assume that it dissolves or dissociates in solution. So there's a different kind of ice problem, different kind of equilibrium problem we have to work in these cases. So I'll put a star by the only one you're really going to have to worry about, the one I'm talking about in the notes here. But I'm just thinking, if you're going into 1C, there is another way to talk about dissociate or bases. And so it'd be due to the dissociation of the base in water. So for case one, the only one we're going to care about, we need the KB or the PKB of the base. So any questions about these first two, which are the easier examples? Now, if I can squeeze one more comment in here, there's one trick to these base problems, and that's this. Hydroxide is the answer in the ice problem, so it needs conversion into H+ if you want pH. I'll say it this way. Hydroxide is in the ice problem, not H+. So questions before we move on. Okay. Oh, yes, please.
Specifically for ammonia, since there's no H plus in solution.
Wait, I'm sorry. I guess I got distracted when I did that. I just noticed I wrote, wow. Okay, now please, go ahead.
So specifically for this reaction of ammonia and water, since there is no H plus in solution, how do we find the pH then?
From the pOH, because you can solve for hydroxide. Now,
okay.
I want to do something that, not to make you all mad, but the people that are sharp are going to say, wait a minute, ammonia gas, how is that in equilibrium really? So the way we work the problems is we assume that magically ammonia enters into solution but doesn't act as a base. And so there's this mythical creature, NH3, neutral, aqueous, that we write to set up an ice problem and properly solve and gets the right answers. I don't think that made everybody happy. Did everybody understand why I made that switch? In an equilibrium constant, you'd need everything in the same phase. And I was telling the story about ammonia because I tell that story about hydrogen chloride as well, that hydrochloric acid is really when you bubble HCl through water. But if we're solving a solution problem, then we kind of blink and just pretend that ammonia really was something already dissolved in water. And then we talk about it dissociating. If that makes everybody uncomfortable, I can fix that really easily. I'll use the same example I used the other day. I'll use an amine. So now, clearly, all that's going on is it's interacting with water. And I will just avoid the whole ammonia thing in the future, at least until we get through it the first time. So now with that slightly simplified example, any questions? All right, so let's move on to the third one, which is pH of a solution of a conjugate of a weak base. Oh, dear. Okay. Yes. This is the ammonia problem. That's what my problem is. I forgot that I'd made that a separate issue. So pH of a solution of a conjugate of a weak base. So there's a couple of different example problems. One example problem is, suppose you dissolve ammonium chloride in water, or you neutralize an amine with hydrochloric acid. And let me separate these out and talk about what is going on in each case. So here's where we handle things like ammonia. Ammonium, good grief. So ammonium chloride, this is a strong electrolyte. So that means in aqueous solution, it automatically dissociates to form ammonium and chloride. Now, chloride is what? It's the conjugate of HCl. So that means Cl minus is not basic. And that's because HCl is super duper strong. Remember, the strength of an acid is inversely proportional to the strength of its conjugate base. We know HCl loves to let go of H+. So the Cl- that forms doesn't want to take that H+ back. So that's why I said the chloride is not basic. So that means all we have to do is focus on the ammonium ion. And ammonium is acidic. You might say, wait, how am I supposed to know that? Well, it's the conjugate of a weak base. So, it is acidic, which means it's going to dissociate in solution. So as you can see, we end up with H plus in our answer because ammonium is the conjugate acid of a weak base. Now, what about the second example? I neutralize something with HCl. All right, so if I take an amine, and force it to completely react with HCl, it will make an, okay, this gets confusing, ammonium salt. Ammonium is a term also used to refer to ions like this. Now, here's the thing. Since this product is the conjugate of a weak base, since this product is the conjugate of a weak base, if it is forced to form by neutralization, it will then establish equilibrium by dissociating. And so that means that this ion that we just formed didn't want to form 100%. That's the confusing part about this whole discussion. We write this forward arrow, but it turns out not really to be true. If you force it to go all the way forward like that, think that whole equilibrium discussion we had the other day. Forcing a weak acid or weak base to fully dissociate is forcing it uphill in energy, forcing Q to be too big, making where you only have the reverse reaction possible, which is exactly this. For this to go back, let go of that H plus again, which means the result in either one of these cases is going to be an acidic solution. So what do we need? We need the pKa from, I'm sorry, Ka or pKa. We need actually the conjugate K-A-P-K-A from the base K-B-P-K-B. Oops. Now, most of the time in the problem like this, I would be asking for pH. So that's why I wrote the problem this way. Why? Well, because the conjugate of a weak base is going to be acidic, its own self. So that's why it makes sense to work a pH problem. But now let's see the last type of problem, which is the pH of a solution of a conjugate of a weak acid. So what did I just say? pH of a solution of the conjugate of a weak acid. Oh, page three, it will...
It will be established equilibrium.
It will... I meant to say then. I left an N out. Thank you.
Okay.
It will then establish. Yeah, that makes much more sense. Okay, so here are the two cases of conjugate of a weak acid. It could be something like this. And let's see how I write that. And it'll be dissolve something like sodium methoxide. Let me write out the name of that ion. It's a concatenation, a shortening of methyl oxide. So you put a CH3 group, which is a methyl group, single carbon group, on an oxygen, becomes methoxide. Reacts very similar to hydroxide. It just happens to have a carbon on it. So what's going to happen? Well, remember that this is from the conjugate of a weak acid. So that means technically it can react in water to form the original acid. Plus, it would make hydroxide. Let's see here. Ah, now technically, you would have sodium with it as well. But if you have the substance sodium hydroxide, which we do, then we could say that sodium is not acidic. I'm not going to try to make you understand the full explanation here, because again, it's something a little bit beyond this course, involves what are known as KSP, or solubility products. So in this case, I will just have to ask you, you believe for the moment that sodium, if it's floating around in water, isn't going to do anything on its own. So in other words, we can say that it's just a spectator. So this is a KB problem again. And maybe you don't recognize the format of it, but methoxide is an anion. So this is B minus reacting with water to form BH, the thing that has the proton put back on it, plus hydroxide. All right? So now a similar situation would occur if this, if we neutralized something like acetic acid to make acetate. So we would take acetic acid, and if it reacts with sodium hydroxide, we assume it completely reacts and makes sodium acetate. And water. But the sodium acetate is a conjugate. Of a weak base, no, sorry, came from a weak acid. So it is It came from a weak acid, so it is itself a base. And let me just add it again, sodium is a spectator. So we're just going to ignore it. And it becomes this equation then. Acetate, which was forced to form, gets its revenge, reacts with water, and forms acetic acid and hydroxide. So in both cases, what do we need? Well, we need the KB or PKB. Which, let me say it the same way I did on the previous page. We need the conjugate KB or PKB from the acid KA or PKA. And then the gotcha in this problem is, how did I say it on the previous page? Same thing as in problem two. Hydroxide is in the ice problem. Not H+. So if you solve the ice problem for a problem like this, then the answer you're going to get at the end, the X is likely the hydroxide concentration, so then you'll have to convert it into H+. Uh-oh. Oh my goodness. Thank you. Someone has pointed out that I guess I'm not totally here today or something. That's because I got the wrong page numbers even. Why doesn't it form sodium hydroxide? It technically does. But the sodium is a spectator, so we don't include it when we're calculating the equilibrium constant. Okay, I guess all that leaves me the time with is the only other topic that I thought I would get to, which is some examples of strong and weak acids and bases. Now, we already know that strong acids are things that have large Ka. We know that weak acids are things that have small Ka. Similarly, strong bases are the things that have a large KB, and weak bases are things that have a small KB. So some of our typical examples of strong acids they include nitric acid, sulfuric acid, most of the halo acids, so HCl, HBr, and HI. One other that's often included here is perchloric acid, which is incredibly nasty stuff, but technically part of the list. What are some examples of weak acids? Well, curiously, HF is one. And that has to do with just how strongly fluorine likes to bond with things. Now, strong and weak don't necessarily mean anything about how harmful a substance is. It just means about dissociation. So just as a small bit of storytelling, yes, if you take any of the strong acids and get them on your skin, if they're in concentrated form, they will cause serious chemical burns. But HF absorbs through the skin and instead attacks your bones. You know, calcium in bones, fluoride, they like to combine. Not a good thing to get at all, a good thing to get exposed to hydrofluoric acid. So if you're in a lab that ever works with it, usually it's just one or two people in a lab authorized even to use the stuff. And then there's masks and shields and everything because it's incredibly nasty stuff. It's great, though, for the purpose it's often used for, which is to rip the top layer of either quartz or glass so that you have an absolutely clean surface to put biological samples on, for example. So it does get used. But I'm just storytelling a little bit to say strong does not mean harmful. Weak does not mean unharmful. That's the point of the story. Other weak acids, the other main one you should know, that's not related to the ones up above, is acetic acid, or in general, carboxylic acids. Remember that you're not seeing that anymore. Hold on. There you go. So the COOH group is a functional group that I've probably talked about before. And there's hundreds or thousands of common biological molecules that have that functional group. So you may not know the names of any others, but butyric acid, that's the smell that you get from butter that's gone bad. You have lauric, stearic, myristic, oleic, palmitic, all these longer chain carboxylic acids that end up incorporated in fats. They all have acidities kind of sort of similar-ish. They're all generally in the weak acid category. Now, some other common ones. Nitric acid is strong. Nitrous acid is not. Sulfuric acid is strong. Sulfurous acid is not. Phosphoric acid, one of the other common ones, happens to itself be a weak acid.